Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And a happy new year to all of the listeners out there. Hopefully your New Year's Eve was better than the Blues.
I watched the Stranger Things finale instead of the Blues, and I thought to myself, you know, I was pretty disappointed with this. Maybe I should see how the Blues did tonight. And then I was happy with my decision after I looked at the box score and the highlights. Yeah, it was a pretty rough night.
Yeah, if you were like Nathan watching the Stranger Things finale or at a New Year's Eve party or just not watching the Blues last night, the story of the game was a 6-1 Colorado win. And really, that's kind of a merciful final score if you think about how the game went early on in particular. It was 3-0 after 3.5 minutes. It was 4-0 at the first TV timeout. I believe the Colorado Avalanche had the first 15 shots on goal last night. So shots were 15-0. The score was 4-0. I believe the shots ended up for the entire game, 43-13. Just an absolute blitzing last night in Denver. And, you know, on the one hand, the Colorado Avalanche are a historically great hockey team right now.
Yeah.
They're now 32-7. Like, they have 2 regulation losses in 39 games.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Absurd.
How hot they've been.
Absurd. They're on pace for the best record ever in the NHL, which would eclipse the Bruins from a few years ago when they put up 135 points under Jim Montgomery. So this is a historically great hockey team that's not lost here, but just the way that the Blues lost and the way that it happened so quickly and so it was all just around the net, you know, same sort of issue that they've talked about before, just doesn't leave a good taste in a lot of people's mouths for the year of 2025.
Yeah, and it doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence for the start of 2026, does it, right? Like, I mean, you know, that's the kind of game where you're outclassed in every single facet, and, you know, you're right. You know, you look at Colorado and the heater they are on and have been on since the season started. And, you know, you kind of just looking at the schedule kind of, you know, I don't know if you ever chalk one up to a loss before it starts, right? But this one was pretty close. You know, what was the first goal? A minute in and then the next
exactly
two in the next 90 seconds or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, this one was, for all intents and purposes, over before it started. And, you know, the thing is, like, even as bad as the Blues have looked at times, I have not felt like they were out of it before it started until this one. And, you know, I guess the saving grace is maybe that it happened against the Avalanche instead of, like, you know, the Kraken or something, right? But, like, man, what a brutal, brutal loss. Maybe they can leave it in 2025 and you know, start fresh like some of the rest of us are trying to do, but I am not hopeful at this point.
Yeah, and I think... Yeah, like the way that it happened to, like, Nichushkin's first goal a minute in, you know, it's kind of a blown coverage where two guys go to one guy in the corner and Nichushkin has some open ice. His initial shot is blocked and then he gets rebounds. Same thing with McKinnon on his first goal. Robert Thomas neutral zone turnover. He loses him at the crease, gets a rebound right at the net front in the back of the net. Nichushkin again, rebound at the side of the crease, back of the net. And then McKinnon, it's a bad change. And then it's a one-timer from the circle. Like, these are all the mistakes. Like, yes, Colorado is a great team and they capitalize on it. That's what great teams do. And it was 4-0 in a blink of an eye, but they saw the Blues mistakes in coverage, in net front, protecting the net front, in a bad line change, in neutral zone turnover. Like, these are mistakes that the Blues made that Colorado was able to capitalize on. And it just, yeah, I think I get what you're saying about the scheduled loss. Like, yeah, this is, you would feel a whole lot worse if this was Vancouver or Calgary coming
right
out 4-0, 4.5 minutes into the game. And it just never really is competitive after that. But the fact that it was maybe the best team of all time lightens the blow a little bit, but it also kind of shows you how far you have to go, right?
it's still an embarrassment. It's still, you know, it's still just brutal. And, you know, the thing is, like, yes, this is the Avalanche, but this was indicative of what's been going on all season long.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that first mistake, you know, and then it begins to trickle. It's like, you know, we may either the Blues may have games where, you know, everything's clicking, and those are the games where they play really, really well. And you go, okay, this is the Blues team that we saw at the end of the 24-25 season, you know, and in that playoff series with Edmonton. And then you go back to this season and you start watching some of these games, and all, you know, it's that first goal. It's that first rush. It's that first, you know, bad pass that leads to a goal, you know, a turnover and a goal, whatever it is. And then what happens is it feels like other areas of the team start trying to compensate for that, you know, and that then more mistakes happen. It's like it's almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy after that first big mistake. And I think we saw that not in spades last night, but especially in those first 4 or 5 minutes, just bang, 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 mistake, 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 and capitalizing all over the place.
Yeah, and I think I saw some tweets about Jordan Binnington and the way that he performed last night, but I think if you watch that game, you see what happened in front of him. He makes the first save on basically all of the goals, and then it's the second one that gets him because there's not enough defending around the crease. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you obviously want him to not give up six, but I hardly would blame him for what happened last night. And you know, like
how many shots did he face? Like 44 shots or something like that? I mean, it was an insane amount of shots. Yeah, 43 crazy shots. Like, of course, of course, some of those are going to get in. That's what happens when you face 40 plus shots.
Yeah. And, you know, like this is, like, as you mentioned, somewhat indicative of what the Blues have been going through. Like, I think you can tell the story just in their goal differential. Worse than the lead, minus 42. And it's really not particularly close either. Like, as much as the Avalanche are up, they're plus 71. They lead the league in goal differential, plus 71, which is 40 goals better than the second place team. So
I almost choked a little bit when you said that.
At plus 71, ooh. Dallas is at plus 31. And then you look at the bottom, and the Blues are at minus 42. Mm. And Vancouver's at minus 24. So there's an 18-goal gap from the worst goal differential, the Blues, to the second worst in Vancouver. And really, have they played like the worst team in the league this year? Probably not. I can't say that definitively. I think you can make an argument, but the fact is that they win small and they lose big, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the way that their wins go. I think before that win down in Florida, where they won 6-2, I think they had nine straight, like their previous nine wins were all by one goal. Mm-hmm. And then they had that Florida game and they beat Nashville by a goal. And then you look at all their losses. This is just the recent ones, right? Colorado 6-1, Buffalo 4-2, Tampa Bay 4-1, Rangers 2-1 in overtime, Nashville 5-2, Nashville 7-2, Boston 5-2, Boston 5-2, Anaheim 4-1. Like they're getting blown out. Like a lot of these games are being lost by three plus goals. And that's been a pretty typical occurrence this year. Like this is not abnormal, even if it was, like we say, the best team in the league in Colorado. But the fact that the Blues have been consistently losing by at least three goals is just kind of an indication that you're not in the game, right?
How many of those games you mentioned were started by Binnington?
Because you
look at like you start in November, you know, both goaltenders were not great in October. We've talked about that forever. But you get to the beginning of November and especially after Thanksgiving, Hofer's been pretty good outside of a couple of clunkers. Binnington, not so much. And it seems to be getting worse. Like, I don't know if you can go all the way to the point that like the wheels have fallen off, but he's been one of the worst regular starting goalies in the league since the beginning of December. And so when you ran off that list of of losses, it immediately made me curious how many of the, you know, you rattled off a couple of 2-1s and 3-2, like how many of those were Hofer and how many of the others were Bennington?
Yeah, let's see. So this is just off the top of my head here. So this Colorado was Bennington, Buffalo was Hofer, Tampa was Bennington, Rangers was Bennington, Nashville at home, I believe, was Hofer.
I think
Nashville,
so, yeah.
On the road was Bennington. Boston at home, I think that was Hofer. Boston on the road was Bennington. Anaheim at home was Bennington. He got pulled really early in the game.
And yeah, that was the one they had the spat there on the bench or whatever.
Yeah, that little tiff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, I mean, I just was doing some research about 3+ goal losses, 14 of them this year for the Blues. So of their 18 regulation losses, obviously you can't lose in overtime or shootout by more than one goal. So 18 regulation losses, 14 of them have been by 3 or more goals. That's the most in the league. Second is Nashville with 12. And even if you look in Blues history, like, it's a pretty good indicator of where the team is at that year. Right. So this year, 14. Last year, 9 all year, made the playoffs. Year before, 21 missed the playoffs. Year before that, 22 missed the playoffs. Then you have 9 made the playoffs, 9 made the playoffs, 9 made the playoffs.
That seems like a pretty, I mean, you know, I know that like numbers like that sometimes kind of get, you know, roasted for being cherry picked, but that seems like a pretty good indicator of at least playoff, maybe not success, but like, you know, whether you're a contender for a playoff spot. And, you know, even though the West is down, you know, minus the Colorados of the world, right? Even though the West overall is down and the Blues are technically in the playoff hunt at this point, despite these embarrassments, that kind of feels like they're not nearly as close as the standings would make it seem. And that perhaps it's time to start. You know, you had a story this week where Montgomery said it's too early to start looking into goalie usage. And I don't know about that. I don't think I agree with that. And, you know, maybe that relates to, okay, it's also maybe too early to start looking at some change. But, man, it really feels like this is a dead end and maybe there needs to be some preparation to start the Steen era.
Yeah, and just we're going to get to goaltending momentarily. And just one last thing on the 3-goal losses. You have to go back to 2018-19. The Blues had 15 of them. I think we all know how that season went with the way they started, firing Mike Yeo, winning Stanley Cup. When you look at those losses, 11 of them happens before the end of December. So only 4 of them happens in like 2019, the 2019 part of that season. So really, but before New Year's, they were where they were in the standings. We all know they were dead last in points at one point. And then they only have 4 of those losses the rest of the year. So it's been a lot of blowouts. That's the moral of the story, right? And, you know, you brought up goaltending. Let's get to the goaltending situation here. Joel Hofer has been, since Thanksgiving, like you mentioned, one of the best goaltenders in the entire league. And kind of acted as a de facto number one goalie for the last maybe 3-4 weeks in the way that the Blues have used him. I think it's interesting how they've gone about that and the way that it is. Like, it's pretty apparent if you're watching what they're doing, you can see they're riding Joel Hofer. He started 3 straight games one time. If you even throw in last night in Colorado, you know, Bennington has only started 3 of the last 9 games. Hofer's got the other 6. Bennington hasn't started 2 in a row since December 1 and 4. And December 1 was that Anaheim game he got pulled from. December 4 was in Boston where he gave up 5, I believe. And so it's been a while since they've counted on him to be the number one guy. And, you know, they're going to split the ones coming up this weekend. I would imagine it goes Hofer against Vegas and Montreal, and then Bennington against Montreal, but I guess we'll find out. But yeah, it's basically has been Hofer. Hasn't even been a back and forth rotation. Yep. It's been Hofer and then Binnington when he needs a rest.
And that's the interesting thing to me about what you wrote last week with, you know, saying it's too early. You didn't say that. Montgomery saying it's too early to read into it. But I just don't, that's what I'm saying. I don't agree with that. I don't know how that's possible. You know, the usage has changed. The results have changed, which means the usage has changed. The actual depth chart may not have changed, but like, it seems pretty obvious that it's not too early, not just for me, but for Jim Montgomery and the Blues too. You know, I see on, you know, Twitter, you know, same as you do, fans, let's politely say just displeased, you know, that Binnington is having the season that he's having. That's the nicest way I can say some of the tweets that I've seen. But, you know, the reality is I don't know what's going on. But, you know, if you're in this position where you're close to playoff position and you want to try to take advantage of that, you know, take advantage of that week West, I don't know if Binnington can get you there right now. And that feels weird to say. You know, it's like, this is a franchise icon. He's the best goaltender the club has ever had. I mean, at least, you know, based on, you know, some leaderboards and things. I mean, certainly there are probably people who love other goalies more, you know, but man, it feels weird to say he can't get you there right now.
Yeah, I mean, there might have been better goalies that have come through St. Louis, but as a Blue, like, he's right, the most decorated goalie in the franchise history. Most wins, most games. Obviously, the cup, I believe he has the most playoff wins as well. So, like, that part of his legacy is there. But I think the month of October kind of set up the decisions that the Blues are making now, in a way. Like, because the goaltending wasn't good, like, either of them in October, it kind of gives you a situation where when one of them gets going, just ride that for as long as you can.
Yeah.
Because you don't know how long it's going to last, when it's going to drop out, when it kind of comes back down. So you might as well take advantage when you can in that situation. And so, you know, since Thanksgiving, Hofer has a .931 save percentage, second best in the league behind Darcy Kemper, and Hofer's played four more games. And then he has a 198 goals against average, which is the fifth best in the league. Meanwhile, if you want to look at the other side of things, Bennington's got an 847 save percentage, which is the third worst in the league. And he's got a 452 goals against average, which is also, it's the fifth worst in the league.
Yeah.
So the kind of the difference has been stark. And one of the things that I used to, this is one of my favorite sayings, I don't know if someone else said it before me, but I love repeating it, is that coaches may lie, players may lie, management may lie, but ice time never lies.
Ball don't lie, except it's puck. Puck don't lie.
Puck don't lie.
Puck don't lie.
Ice time never lies. And so usually that applies to skaters when the coach is saying, yeah, he's playing well, but then you see him playing 8 minutes a night. Like, you know how the coaches really feel about him. And in this case, the goalies, like, it's the starts and how many games he played. And, you know, same kind of standard since Thanksgiving. Joel Hofer has played 11 games, which is tied for the fifth most in the league. Now, it's not only nine of them were starts, two of them he came on in relief of Jordan Binnington. And so if you look at starts, he's way down at tied for 13th in the league. But it's still, you know, that's where you look at the usage of him and how often the Blues have leaned on him to really lead them in the crease. So, yeah, I don't know how long this lasts, because Jordan Bennington's been here before. Like, this is, you know, Villahuso.
I'm glad you brought up Husso, because I was about to do the same. Yeah.
Like, he took his job. He started game one of the playoffs. Like, that's the biggest indication that a goalie no longer has that job. And so he's been here before. And he got his job back after Husso stumbled after games two and three against Minnesota. Binnington wins that series. He's playing great against Colorado, gets hurt. You know, I know Blues fans like to talk about, if he doesn't get hurt, they go on a run. And, you know, maybe that's true, but that Colorado team as well was pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's, he lights I wouldn't say he likes a challenge, but he does respond well to being mm-hmm. challenged, Jordan Binnington. And so I'm curious to see how this goes, particularly with his Olympic job probably up for grabs too.
Yeah, it's great that you mentioned that, because I've wondered all season if the Olympics were a distraction, and that if maybe, you know, now that he's, you know, he's got at least a spot, you know, he doesn't have a hold of the starting job by any stretch, I would think, at this point, but at least got a spot. I thought, okay, well, maybe now he can relax, you know, the pressure's off, and we'll get a good game. And that did not happen. So my theory is probably Bupkis at this point, is my guess. But that was my hope, and haven't seen it yet. But there's still time to play. You know, the thing to consider too is that, you know, the long layoff last year with the Four Nations seemed to really help the Blues get back on track and get going. I mean, we all know how great they were after. You know, maybe the Olympic break offers them the same opportunity. It's just a matter of, will the opportunity still be there by the time the Olympics are over?
Yeah, and yeah, as you talked about before, like the West is so crunched together that maybe they're close enough to where, you know, 3 good weeks puts them in a good spot, but it's a situation where, like, can we really trust this team to get 3 good weeks together? It's similar to last year where they were the last team in the league to not win 3 games in a row. This year, it's actually them and Edmonton, I believe, unless Edmonton's put together 3 wins in a row.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're asking for 3 good weeks in a row. I don't know if we've seen 3 good days in a row yet.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know how you get to 3 weeks if you can't do 3 days. And, you know, listening to Montgomery talk about practice, it sounds like it's not just games either. So, I don't know.
And, you know, like, I think the Four Nations, it did help. I think there's 2 different parts where it helped. I think Binnington benefited from having a confidence boost from that tournament, which,
yeah,
there is a fair bit of revisionist history I would like to throw in there about that.
Oh, tournament, I love that.
And the way that it went. Jordan Binnington had a great final. He had a great championship game, particularly in overtime. Like that, he made some great saves. I think we'll all remember that Brady Tkachuk one. In overtime, yeah. He had one on Matthews, I think, right from the slot, and set up Canada to have the winning goal by McDavid. That's what everyone will remember, because that is the biggest moments of the tournament, right? Like those, if he doesn't make those saves, they lose. That's it. So that's what he gets credit for. What I think we forget, because of those big moments, those big saves, those championship winning saves, really, is that it was an honest and open question if he deserved to start in the third round robin game or in the championship game. Like in, I think it was that first game against Finland. I think it was Finland when Canada came back and won in overtime. Like he did not have a good game. He against the United States gave up, I believe it was Jake Gensel from the wing. It was a bad goal. Like it was a legitimate question among Canadians whether Binnington deserved to start later on in that tournament versus Aiden Hill. And so I think we can look at the championship game and the way that he played and say, yes, that was a fantastic game, fantastic moment. And it happened to be in Boston again, where he won a Stanley Cup. So like those are great, but I think the overall picture of the tournament is kind of lost with those moments, because the opening few games weren't what you'd kind of expect from him in those moments.
You know, it makes me wonder, we've talked about, you know, Huso, we've talked about the slow start with Four Nations, obviously slow start this season. You think he's just a slow starter now, you know, finally warms up at some point and takes off and he's Binnington, or, you know, it's like, maybe it's like, you know, listen, I'm 38, right? And when I was 22, I could get up and I could go hang out and I could do whatever on no sleep. And I could go, now I'm 38. I need to warm up a little bit first, you know, before I, that's why I couldn't go out last night for New Year's Eve and had to stay in watching Stranger Things. I can't do that anymore. Maybe that's what it is. You know, maybe he's got to warm up a little bit. He's got to stretch the legs, you know, drink a little orange juice. You know, just to get the blood flowing, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I don't particularly have a good response to that theory.
I'm just talking most of the time, to be honest. I wouldn't put too much stock in many of my theories.
I think maybe you're just hypothesizing, you know?
Yeah. I'm just trying to solve problems. That's what I am, Matt. I'm a problem solver by nature. I'm just, you know, I want to solve this problem for the Blues, but I don't think I'm equipped for that.
Yeah. And you know, like at the Olympics, if you missed the announcement, Jordan Bennington and Colton Parayko named to Team Canada. And Bennington is one of three goalies. He's also going with Logan Thompson of the Capitals and Darcy Kemper of the Kings. Logan Thompson, I think, is the one to watch for Bennington's job. Like, I think because of that lasting memory from the Four Nations Championship game, Hockey Canada management, John Cooper as a coach, I believe that they'll give Jordan Bennington the benefit of the doubt, despite what his NHL numbers look like right now. But I think the leash will be shorter than it was at Four Nations. If he does have a bad game or two, I believe Logan Thompson's going to be waiting there in the wings, and who knows what happens at that point. If Bennington gets back in the crease, if they trust him to play in a medal round game, things like that. So it is an open question to me whether he finishes the tournament as a starter. I do think that he will begin it as a starter, but we'll just have to see how he performs at that point.
It seems like you're not very confident in what.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I don't think.
I don't blame you based on like how the season has gone. I get that, but it's like
his performance hasn't.
I know. Confidence. But that's what I was saying earlier. Like, it feels so weird to me to say that about Bennington. Like, this is a guy that, even when he was, even at his lowest, you know, well, prior to this, you know, you could go, it's Benner. You know, he's going to be fine. You know, let him figure it out. Let him go fight somebody or yell at somebody, and he'll be, you know, we'll get on track, you know, and it doesn't feel like that anymore. And that's, you know, there's a lot of talk about a changing of the guard and when the time is and all that, but man, the feelings of it just, I don't know. It feels weird to me, but I get it. I'm not confident either.
And really, like, I mean, you look at the contract situation with Hofer and Bennington, they're both signed through next year. And then after that, Hofer becomes a restricted free agent. Bennington becomes an unrestricted free agent. They both need new contracts. Like, next year kind of lined up contract wise to be sort of the transition year of maybe giving Hofer more responsibility. Maybe he's the starter, or maybe it's the year after that when, you know, if Bennington signs elsewhere, then Hofer becomes a starter. So if anything, maybe we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but it always seems, just based on the contracts, that next year was going to be that sort of transition year. And I guess we've arrived early right now, as it seems.
Yeah, ahead of schedule, I think, is a great turn of phrase on that, because that's kind of that, you know, as this season has kind of collapsed. Well, I don't know. Maybe it never really got out of the, you know, gate. Maybe it didn't collapse. I don't know. But as this season has gone the way it's gone, I have thought that maybe there is some benefit to taking a Cardinals like approach, you know, and letting some of the youth, you know, get their chances. We've seen Dvorsky come up this year. We've seen Stenberg come up this year. You know, there are other guys waiting in the wings, you know, ready to take opportunities. Maybe there's some benefit to being ahead of schedule on some of those guys and getting them more opportunities here. But man, it's going to be lean while you do.
Yeah. And you know, makes you wonder what the rest of the season looks like. You know, Braden Schenn is probably going to be a popular target at the trade deadline. Justin Falk is probably going to be a popular target at the trade deadline. I know Jordan Kyrou has a full no trade clause now, but I wonder how many calls the Blues take on him and if he would look for a new place. You know, in St. Louis, it seems like he's the one that gets singled out a lot because he doesn't do a lot besides score goals, which scoring goals is very important.
But yeah, that's the big one. Yeah.
Yeah. When you look at, you know, what Robert Thomas and Pavel Buchnevich have done this season against expectations, they've underperformed, right? Mm-hmm. But the fact that they can do other things in the game to impact the game, it matters to the coaching staff. And when Jordan Kyrou doesn't have those abilities, he's the one who gets four shifts in the third period. He's the one who gets healthy scratched. And when you add up those things and you wonder, is he going to be welcoming to a change of scenery? I don't know. But I do think that the next 2 months up until the trade deadline, we're going to have to see what Doug Armstrong and Alex Steen want to do, because they're going to have some decisions to make. And whether it's, you know, trading from that mid-30s group of guys and kind of rebuilding the young 20s core, or if it's hanging on and making a move in the summer? I don't know, because this is Doug Armstrong's final year as general manager, and it is on pace to be his worst one as the Blues general manager. And I think if they had different expectations heading into this season, it probably would have felt different for him, right? If last year hadn't finished the way it did, and you're still kind of looking at this team as outside the playoffs and kind of rebuilding, like, you can not accept but understand where they're at right now. But because this season came out of nowhere, really, like, no one expects them to be towards the bottom of the league, I think it kind of hurts Doug Armstrong personally a little bit more. And maybe what he does at the trade deadline, I don't know if that impacts that or not. But I do know that Alex Steen's going to be involved with whatever they do.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not making the decisions on the small things, but big things that'll impact the future, impact the look of the core. Like, Alex Steen will have a large, large, large say in what happens in those discussions, in those decisions. So I don't know. I don't know where we go from here, but I'm intrigued to find out.
There are a lot of folks who, when we talk about Steen being involved and taking over next year, with the way this season has gone, there are a lot of folks nervous about that, right? First time GM walking into, it's like that scene, I think it was Community, where Donald Glover walks in and everything's on fire, like, that's kind of how it feels, right? This is fine. For having a first time GM, leading the transition coming out of that seems scary, but man, the way he was as a player, his hockey IQ, his style kind of makes me hopeful that maybe he can build a team that, kind of fits his profile, not necessarily as a specific player, but sort of his philosophy of the game. And, that may be something worth watching, because you get a guy like that, he goes and finds a handful of few more guys like that. Now, listen, I'm not saying they're going to be this year's Colorado by any stretch, but, like, I think a philosophy change could do wonders for this team at this point. And I don't know if that's an Armstrong thing. I don't know if it's a Montgomery thing, or maybe just, we are where we are and this is what we need to do with what we have sort of situation. But it feels like a fundamental philosophical and structural change is on the horizon.
And I think that's maybe one of the biggest unknowns is, I have no idea what Alex Steen's philosophy as general manager is going to be. It's not like he's been an AGM for 20 years and you kind of see what he likes and what he doesn't and how he would go about things. And he's been pretty quiet since he's joined the front office. So I think the last year and this year has been a lot of learning. And even, like, we can talk about the change, but Doug Armstrong's still going to be around as president of hockey ops. Like, he's still going to be there. It's just, I think we were starting to get a peek into what it will look like next year when Alex Steen is making the phone calls to other GMs, when he's the one kind of doing the work in building a team and having those discussions internally with his team as well. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. I don't know how it's going to go.
It kind of feels like the way the Cardinals have gone the last couple of years. Like, Bloom was kind of off in this advisor role. Chaim Bloom, new president of baseball operations, was off in this advisor role, kind of quiet. And then he takes over and bang, we're off and running. So, I don't know where the Cardinals are going and I don't know where the Blues are going, but it's certainly, some excitement. So maybe we can get a little bit of that next year after this disappointing year.
Sure.
There's nothing like the American Express Platinum Card. Find out your welcome offer after you apply, which could be as high as 175,000 points. Learn more and find out your offer at americanexpress.com/explore-platinum. Terms apply.
All right, we're going to finish up here at the net front with a little bit of a draft. We're going to talk about the biggest storylines or moments of 2025, the last calendar year that we just went through. Nathan, I feel like we're going to do the way you want to do, like, a snake draft.
We could do snake if you want. Yeah, I mean, there's only two of us, so I don't really know.
how that's going to work. All right. So I'm going to have a number one in one hand and number two in the other one. And you pick right or left, and then that'll be the one.
You know what's going to happen is I'm going to say left, right, and then you're gonna show it. No. It's just going to look like your right hand because of the way the camera works.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you whether it's my left or my right.
Okay, left. Give me left.
Left. All right. Left's number one.
Yeah. First
pick. All right. So
that's pretty good.
Biggest.
This
blues,
is a lot of pressure, though.
I know. Yeah. Biggest blues storylines. Moments from 2025. Number one overall pick. Nathan, what you got?
All right. I'm going moment, and I'm going with a heartbreaker. I'm going with game seven.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been the number one pick, too.
I mean, listen, it's maybe not a story. Maybe it's just the end to a story, and maybe a beginning of another one, right? Because things have not gone well since then. But man, that game, first of all, that's maybe the most exciting game of hockey I've ever seen in my life. And I don't think I've ever gone from such high to such low so fast. And I can't imagine how, like, first of all, the players, coaches, staff, but like the biggest, you know, the towel guy, you know, stuff like that. How do those people feel, you know, when that happened? I mean, just devastating. And it set the stage for what was a fun summer and has now been an incredibly disappointing fall and early winter.
Yeah, I think that was a no doubter, knock it out of the park, game seven versus Winnipeg. That is the moment from 2025 for the Blues. Like, the way the series went, you know, neither road team won a game. And then you go into game seven, it's 3-3 in the series. The Blues have a lead. They have a 2-goal lead in third period. You're thinking they're moving on to the second round, playing Dallas.
Oh, I was celebrating. I mean, I mean, it was over in my head, you know, it was done.
And bang, bang. It looked like 1.6 seconds, but this is a pet peeve of mine, Nathan.
Okay.
It looks like 1.6 because that's when the goal went in, right? Mm-hmm. But then they added 0.6 of a second more. So technically speaking, it was 2.2 seconds that the puck went in.
Listen, I appreciate your dedication to accuracy. That's my favorite thing about you.
We got to make sure the first draft of history is correct, at least, right?
That's right.
So 2.2 seconds to tie the game, double overtime, Jets are the game winner. Heartbreaker, one of probably the most painful losses in Blues history, happens in Winnipeg in game seven. So great first pick. I think that's undoubtedly the correct one.
Knocked it out of the park. I was worried I'd pull a Cleveland Browns there.
And so I'll go with the 12 game win streak.
Okay.
Franchise record, 12 game win streak. That, you know, as you talked about game seven being a precursor to the summer and to the expectations of this fall, like the win streak set up that playoff series, right? Like they were out of it. They could have sold at the deadline. They could have done a bunch of different things, but the way they were playing after Four Nations, when they went on that 12 game win streak, that gave you belief in Jim Montgomery, gave you belief in the core. It allowed a lot of different things. And honestly, when it was happening, it was a lot of fun to be around.
So fun.
You know, they're in a great mood. The fans are believing. They're playing great hockey. Like they have Jobu in the dressing room. Like they have a lot of things going on during that 12 game win streak. And I think it provided a lot of hope and really, regardless of the big picture of things and whether you want to say that the 12 game win streak was maybe detrimental to the overall direction of the franchise, if that provided false hope, false belief, like I listen to that argument.
Yeah. But
when you watch sports and you're a fan and your team is on one of those runs.
Yeah, man, it's just fun.
Just go enjoy it.
Do you remember how hot Enterprise Center was during that run? Like, and I don't just mean like temperature, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
no, it had a buzz,
fans were going nuts. You know, I mean, I've never, you know, that was so cool. You know, listen, the Blues have a great fan base. I've been in Enterprise Center several times. I don't mean to like draw a line between a normal crowd and those crowds. Right. But like, man, those crowds were fun, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's what it's supposed to be about. And I love that we started this draft with like the two positives, you know,
from 2025.
I mean, I think getting there is a positive. Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, you just talked about, right? Like this was a team that could have been sellers at the deadline. And then they take a number one seed. Were they number one or number two? I don't remember. Take them to seven games.
Number one, yeah.
Take them 7 games, 2.2 seconds, not 1.6 seconds.
Yeah, there you go.
Away from winning that series and advancing. You know, I mean, that was, yeah, I think there's good vibes to take away from that, even if it was heartbreaking.
Yeah. And I think when you mentioned the crowds, the Blues did have a long sellout streak that ended. And in the early season, those crowds were kind of, I wouldn't say lacked, but they weren't sellouts every game. And then suddenly they get on this win streak and the sellouts are coming back. So I think you do have a fair point about the building being alive during that time. So, all right. So I guess my second pick here, I'll go with a storyline. And I'm going to go with the end of the retool. And so that is Doug Armstrong saying, yeah, like we're done accumulating future assets. We're here to kind of get assets for now and to make this team better and to compete for a playoff spot and turn the corner. Like that was something that they were looking at doing. Like they went out and got Pew Suter because they needed the center. Like this is probably the second best center on the market during free agency. And he comes to St. Louis on a short-term deal because the Blues think that they can fortify their center depth. They can add a piece and they can have Broberg and Holloway kind of step forward and how much they kind of sped up this turnaround, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like that was a big talking point from the Blues front office over the summer was we don't need the first round picks that are going to impact the team in 5 years. We want to get going now. We want to get this veteran D. We want to get these young guys to develop more. Like we want to be a contender because last year under Jim Montgomery, their underlying numbers were great. Obviously the results were great. Took the best team in the regular season to game 7 of the playoffs. Like it was the end of the retool as they made their decisions as they did all those things. So I think that's a good storyline that will impact, as we talked about earlier, the Alex Steen era. But I think that one is a big storyline that I like to have on my team, Nathan.
I like that. I think that's good. I'll tell you though, we've already reached the point where we're only 2 picks in out of 3 picks here, and you've already forced me to move up a pick here, because if you're going end of the retool, I'm going the let's call it inconsistency of some of the big contracts. I wrote down Thomas, Fowler, Buchnevich, and Kyrou. All four have at various times been incredible in 2025. Yep. And at various times been, let's say bad to terrible, depending on who you're talking about and when. And, you know, the talk of the retool being over and the youth movement starting to arrive and the core being ready to go. Now, all of a sudden, the top end, the older end, we'll say a veteran end, maybe a nicer way to say that, of that core suddenly doesn't appear to be living up to those contracts. And most of them have full or partial no trade clauses. And, you know, you talk about the retool being over and that affecting the Steen era. Some of these contracts are going to affect the Steen era for sure. And some of these contracts, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about Kyrou possibly, you know, with this season going the way it has, not just for him, but the club as a whole potentially being open to waiving his, you know. I don't mean to put words in his mouth by any stretch, but you know, some of those contracts are going to be discussions coming up, and you know, I don't know that the contracts themselves are the problem as much as the inconsistency. And certainly there's, you know, with any or all of those guys, it's not hard to see them finding that consistency again. But if they don't, and they have not so far in 2025, or the late end of 2025 anyway, this season, it's going to be a big deal. So I think, you know, I think that's a story that maybe didn't have a lot of impact necessarily in the first half of the year, but the second half of the year, and certainly heading into 2016, I think it's going to be a big deal.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, in the first half, you saw the good side of it, right? Like Thomas was one of the best players in the league after the Four Nations faceoff. Cam Fowler is one of the best defensemen in the playoffs. I think if you looked at the end of the playoffs, he was still probably towards the top of the defenseman scoring leaderboard, even though he played one rounds. Like everyone else around him was on Edmonton or Florida because they played 20 something games. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, I understand what you're saying from the inconsistency standpoint, because those two guys were unreal. They were nails in the spring, and then in the fall, it's kind of been a lot more up and down. So I get what you're saying there.
Well, and that spring got Fowler the contract, you know, and got the bigger deal, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, that inconsistency has directly led to transactions, you know, I mean, that's, that consistency and now this, you know, but it's going to be tough in 26 with some of those guys if they can't get it going.
All right. Last pick you got here, Nathan, on your team right now, you have game 7 versus Winnipeg and inconsistency of big contracts.
And that feels like a good base, doesn't it? Feels I'm close to a championship here. I can feel it. This is going to clinch.
What's going to round out?
All right. Yeah, this is going to be a little I'm going with a wild one here. I'm going with a wild pick. Okay, I'm gonna throw you a curveball. Second chances.
Okay,
so let's start with Montgomery. Kind of well known second chances, right? He's had his personal issues, which we've written about and talked about. I don't need to relitigate those here. Goes out from Boston and brought to St. Louis, another second chance. And then the Blues a couple of times this year have brought in a couple of players who, you know, were looking for a second chance after various issues in Milan Lucic and Dylan. Is it Dubé or Dube? Dylan Dube?
Dubé.
Dubé, Dylan Dubé. So they've brought in a couple of guys looking for second chances. And those are like, those are bigger second chances, right? Like, those are philosophical and they are almost societal in a way, right? That, like, these are guys who had other issues to getting the second chances. But second chances is a theme here for the Blues. You know, Binnington's getting chances here. You know, some of these younger guys are getting chances.
Yeah, but I mean, those are they're different.
I understand. I'm not saying that. This is why I said second chances as my pick. I'm not talking about just career second chances.
That's a big umbrella you got.
That's right. That's why I'm throwing you a curveball here. See, I'm getting all the second chances. But here's the thing. It's not just a good thing, right? The second chance goals, that's what's killing the Blues right now, right? Second chances all across the board, and they're not necessarily always working out, but some of them are. The key, I think, for the Blues is, and here's the real pick. It's not just a big umbrella of second chances. It's making those second chances work. You know, Montgomery worked out last season. That felt great, right? In the beginning of 2025, as we came into the, your first pick, right? The 12 game win streak, my first pick, right? Game 7, even though it was rough, that playoff series was great until that point, until 2.22 seconds left. If the Blues can convert more of those second chances, 2026 is going to be a lot bigger year. So I'm going to take second chances, big umbrella, small and large, but converting second chances, that's my story that I've loved in 2025. I'm going to watch in 2026.
Okay. All right.
Told you it was curveball, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
A knuckle puck, if you will.
I got a lot of lists. I don't have them ranked. I just have a list of,
see, you got to have a draft board, man,
right now. Well, it's just because some of these things are, you know, wide nets. And so, like, I have,
brother, I just said second chances. Cast as wide a net as you want.
No, I'm saying, like, some of the things that we've been talking about are wide nets, and they kind of overlap a little bit. So I'm going to go with the Bolduc Mayhew trade.
I had that on my list too.
That was a kind of a shocker to the system as a pure hockey trade and kind of a lightning rod for conversation when you think about the early season and Mayhew's had his struggles recently. That's why he was a healthy scratch in Colorado. But the fact that he came out and was not very good. Bolduc came out, he was scoring goals in Montreal. I think that was, it wasn't a pure indicator that the retool was over, but they were trading from an area of strength of wingers because they thought they had enough of them. They didn't need another young winger, that they needed a young defenseman. And it's going to take a little bit to get him there. But that was, you know, a trade that the Blues were doing a strength for strength situation with Montreal. Montreal had too many young right D's. The Blues had too many wingers, and that's what happened. And it'll be a trade that we'll probably look back on annually and see how the things are going and see how everything has gone with the two teams. So I'll take Bolduc Mayu, and so do a quick rundown of the teams. You have game seven versus Winnipeg, inconsistency of big contracts and second chances. And I have the 12-game win streak, the end of the retool, and the Bolduc Mayu trade.
I just want to say, you know, you talk about second chances being a wide net. You walked right into my net, brother. Mayu's a second chance guy.
Sure.
And in both ways that I talked about. I mean, he got sent to the AHL for a while, came back up, looked pretty good for there for a second. Not so much since, right? But hey, you convert on a second, maybe a third chance. Maybe we convert on a third chance. You know, I feel like you gave me an F on my last pick there, and I'm bitter about it, to be honest with you.
I mean, it's not probably the pick that I would have gone, but I understand where you're coming from.
Well, I'm crushed. I did pull a Browns, maybe.
So all right. So the undrafted ones that I have listed here, debuts of Dvorsky and Snuderud, Robert Thomas's play for post Four Nations, the goaltending situation that we talked about earlier in this episode, all the injuries. I think when you look back at the spring, you know, Holloway and Tucker hurt, impacting that Winnipeg series. Yep. And then how injuries are impacting them right now.
I had injuries on my draft board too. In fact, I had injuries higher than second chances, but I wanted to make a splash.
You felt pretty good about your core. You decided to take a little bit of a risk.
That's right. Yeah. I was looking for a dog, you know, late in the draft there.
And then, I have a re-signing Fowler to his extension, which kind of goes into the big contract point you had. Yeah. And then I had drafting Carboneau, on there as well. Just
love that.
I didn't think he was way down the list. And so I don't think he was going to be picked in this kind of three round draft, but another young player they have in their system. So,
I wrote down youth movement and it would have included Carboneau in that.
Sure.
So that was part of it. The only one only ones you didn't mention that I had on the list were kind of honestly things that we've already talked about, like the goaltending situation. That's, you know, wasn't as much a story in the first half of the year, but certainly is becoming one. I had, of course, we talked about the contracts, the no trade clauses, injuries, all that. But then the other one that I kind of went in depth in my notes on was the transition from Armstrong to Steen, which the only reason I didn't pick it is it isn't technically a 2025 story.
Right.
I
was thinking about that too, because I was like, well, they named it in 2024.
Right.
And it's like, going to happen in 2026. So like, I guess is it happening right now? But not, yeah. Yeah.
I could have made an argument for it, but I just, you know, I thought, let's make the splash instead.
Sure. Yeah. So I think that's all we got at the net for. You got anything else there, Nathan?
No. Happy New Year. Happy 2026. Let's hope things turn around so we can have a little more fun on this podcast.
That's right. Happy New Year to everyone out there. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt. He's Nathan. See you later.
There's nothing like the American Express Platinum Card. Find out your welcome offer after you apply, which could be as high as 175,000 points. Learn more and find out your offer at americanexpress.com/explorer-platinum. Terms apply.